Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political right my co-host, Dan McKay.
Hey, everybody.
Dan, love to have you, but we have Josh Kanter from the political left in the studio again. Josh is the chairman of the Alliance for a Better Utah.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us the origins of that name, just because I'm kind of curious. Let me tell you why. So I lead a policy institute. Our mantra is informed decisions, because we think, you know, share information, people, if you share it, they'll make good decisions. But for a while, we were thinking about doing better decisions. And then we thought, well, that's not good.
Yeah.
Informed decisions. So you did Alliance for a Better Utah instead of Informed Utah.
For all the reasons you chose not to use better, they chose better.
Let's hear it.
I don't know if I have a good answer to that. It's we used Alliance because we really tried to collaborate with lots of other groups and people and make sure that we're representing a wide swath of the population of Utah. And believing Utah is a great place, we only have upward to go, and so it was better.
Yeah.
So hence the Alliance for a Better Utah.
Best, better, best.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah. Well,
they often accuse us at the legislature of being Alliance for a shady or a worthless Utah or something. You know, that's always like the inverse criticism of the name is like, oh, so we want a worse Utah or something terrible or tragic,
which
always tends to get a little bit under my skin, if I have to admit it. Today.
Well, let's dive in.
For a low-funded education system.
Even better. Just keep going.
Let's dive in and discuss some topics. And this week we had our Senator Mitt Romney give his maiden speech in the U.S. Senate.
And you went back.
I went back.
So what was the experience? I mean, obviously, you were invited, I assume, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And with an invitation, you knew that you would have 9 hours of travel, not including time in the airport, going through security and everything else. So let's call it 12 hours of travel. You had an overnight stay, and because, you know, you can't get in and out of D.C. on the same day. Trust me, I've tried. So you went through all of that for the maiden speech. So it must mean something. Please
mean?
Help me.
Well, so think of it this way. Ann Romney extended the invite, invited friends of the senator, associates, community leaders to be there. There were about 40 of us.
I'm searching my email. I didn't get one.
It's so okay.
Me neither.
It's okay. I think it's because I lead a public policy institute.
Hey, you're a big deal.
But it was interesting to me. I'd never known of a maiden speech, but each senator does it. Mm-hmm. There's a collection of them. And it's where you make a statement of policy as your first major Senate speech. And so it was a big deal. Mitch McConnell was there. Chuck Schumer was there. A lot of the U.S. senators were there to congratulate him afterwards.
Wow.
There were about 100 people in the gallery. Wow. And he spoke about China. So
it is kind of a big deal.
I'm sold that it was important. I felt it was worth being there because out of respect, and I did it in 2 days.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of people for me to meet that are important to the institute I lead. So yeah. Lonnie Chen is a scholar from Stanford, Hoover Institute. He was there and someone I've tried to cultivate a relationship with. So,
yeah.
But the listeners will be more interested in the content of the speech. Josh, did you see any of the coverage?
I did. Yeah, I've read a lot about it. I thought it was a great speech. And it was really, I think, in Mitt Romney's style. I think the positive things he talked about, and particularly the hardships that the country has faced in the past, were really great. I do think he maybe missed an opportunity to talk about the current, what seems more like an attack on our democracy from the current administration rather than an attack on our country and some of the things that he talked about. But I was really impressed with his comments about immigration, although, again, I think those are somewhat at odds with his party, but I hope that he'll continue to speak out about the positive influence of immigration. And he spoke, I think, also about the country's debt. And I think that's a really important thing to have people come back and talk about again.
He basically said China is gone right up to the line of being a geopolitical foe of the U.S. And we need to counter that. And he said you have to counter that by strengthening ourselves. That's where debt came in and the like. He also said you have to challenge them. But he also said, and this was the part that I thought was most interesting, he said you got to strengthen international alliances. He said America has a lot of friends, China has few. And that was really interesting juxtaposed with the president's visit to Europe right now. Hmm. So, Dan, comments from the right?
Yeah, I thought, I haven't seen I've seen coverage and I saw snippets online, so I saw little bits and pieces.
He, by the way, tried to not offend. So he to did. The point, he could have gone after the president, he could have gone after the left, and he was in an inaugural kind of maiden speech. He was trying to be collegial.
Which fulfills my comments a couple of weeks ago, for those that listen, as we talked about it, as I said that Mitt Romney would be, you know, classy and would just kind of aim for a belt-high fastball, and he did. And I think the one place, as I think back on it, and I think about the China policy, and I think about the Russia, the issues that we're dealing with in Russia, and he commented on those as well. I think when you look at the implications of what Mitt Romney offers from a foreign policy perspective, all I can tell America is, nah, we told you. He would have been a great president.
Yeah.
Okay? So you get what you deserve.
Well, it's interesting because he's a statesman. He's a smart guy.
How many Dems would trade right now the last 4 years of Barack Obama to have had 8 years of Mitt Romney and avoid the Trump element?
Well, kind of interesting. Well,
Josh is smiling. I'm wondering. I could see him doing the calculus right now. How would I weigh this out?
Well, I thought you were just going to let me trade Trump for Romney, which I'd do in a heartbeat.
But well,
you made me give up four years of Obama. So I don't know.
No compromise comes without some
pretty
pain.
Good. Other sort of national news, but with a local touch. Jason Chaffetz made clear that he's not going to seek the governor's office in Utah in 2020. Yeah. No surprise. Any surprise from the two of you?
Not for me.
I hear he's making good money with Fox.
Yeah.
I hear he's in line to maybe even have his own show.
Yeah. But let's just think about this even further, right? And I see this all the time from very healthy people.
Mentally healthy or physically?
Mentally healthy. I'm saying all around, whole, complete people.
Got it.
Right? When they walk away from the office and the office doesn't define them, right? Who they are is not defined by the office they're in. And they walk away from the office and then, you know, they find some other definition outside of that office.
It's really hard to go back. Is that where
you're
going?
It's hard to go back.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Hard.
I totally agree.
Because your life is so, and I say this, it is so one-dimensional and enjoyable that it is hard to go back. And there are times when I myself fantasize about that day.
Josh, any comment about
it? Feels like forever.
Chaffetz, or response to that?
Well, my first comment was yay. But beyond that, I think
the only
surprise I guess I have is that I actually do think
he really
that
wants Greg Hughes.
he's got such an ego built into this that the idea of running for governor, I could see, of all the people who could turn down the Fox money to do it, I could see Chaffetz doing it.
But I think out of ego, you're saying.
Out of ego, and I think that means it's best that he's not. I think we need people running for governor who care about the state and really have the best interests of the state at heart. And, you know, Chaffetz spent, what, 8-9 years in Congress, and the only words in his vocabulary were Benghazi and Fast and Furious, and
clever,
I don't
Josh.
Think he becomes
clever.
I don't think he's got the best interest of the
did
state.
Did you read that from a Bagley cartoon?
I did not.
Because I'm pretty sure
pretty
that's
good.
Did he really?
Yeah, that's. I'm pretty sure that's right.
I swear.
From a Bagley cartoon.
I will say that if I'm just thinking of strengths, you know, like doing the things that you're good at, I think that Jason Chaffetz is a great commentator on Fox News. Like he's made for that. He's got the face. He's got the one-liners.
Yeah.
He's smart, you know, can handle the guests. I think that is a great positioning of someone like him. And having him in an executive role, you know, I'm trying to think what he's run, like as a big operation.
Yeah.
So I don't know. So we got other news on the Utah governor's race. This will go past the break. But Greg Hughes, it looks like, is solidly in the race. Dan, you know more about this than either Josh or I.
Well, I mean, he announced an announcement, right? And I always think it's interesting.
Tell me the communication strategy behind that.
Well, you know, if you're going to run for an office and your opponent is marching around the state and, you know, on a goodwill tour, because I think that honestly you can call Spencer Cox's trip around the state, Lieutenant Governor Cox. I think you can legitimately call it a goodwill tour. And you see the amount of press that your opponent is getting, you want to make sure that it's not uninterrupted and that you're not mentioned in every story, which now that he's made an announcement about his announcement, he will be, you know, in that position.
So that explains some of it. Because seriously, what's happening is Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox does this statewide tour, has his van, you know, announcing he's going to visit 240 cities. But he is taking up so much oxygen, you know, on the matter. And if you're definitely getting in, like Greg Hughes, it's just killing you. Am I getting it right? He's just giving up too much. Josh?
Well, even to that point, I mean, even Amy Widener Newton is getting more press about the governor's race than Greg Hughes is. So I think everyone knew he was jumping in, and it's really no surprise. And he probably, like Dan, you're saying, he needs to get in that press cycle by himself.
Yeah. It's, and you can't, you know, there's no such thing as bad press, right?
There's something to that.
So I think just being mentioned and all the candidates, you're going to start seeing comparison articles. You're going to start to see, you know, people talking about the strengths and weaknesses of both candidates. You're going to start to see that comparison in what will, I think, become a very crowded field. And so as someone who wants to be considered a front runner, you want to be mentioned in the early conversations and not the late conversations when there's 30 candidates.
Yeah. You're listening.
No Democrats, by the way, just 30 candidates.
Yeah. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We'll talk some more about this. I'm with Josh Kanner and Dan McKay. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Dan McKay on the right.
Josh Kanner on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We ended the first segment talking about the Utah governor's race. You know, Spencer Cox is out there touring the state and spreading goodness. Greg Hughes has made clear that he's going to enter the race. So the plot is thickening. Josh, on the political left, how are you seeing the plot at this point?
Mostly a plop.
Well, there are going to be so many people entering this race. So I think, as we were talking about, Spencer Cox has been getting all the oxygen in the room. It'll be interesting to see with Hughes if he's really officially in, what happens, because I think Hughes does best when he's sort of back in the metaphorical boxing ring, right? That's his background, and he was good at it, and he's good at it at the legislature, or was, and seeing him kind of up to the fight will be more interesting than seeing him on the sidelines.
What I would view as an uber collaborative partnering candidate in Spencer Cox, and someone who is a go-getter, do good, you know, make it happen action guy in Greg Hughes.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting juxtaposition between the two of them.
Dan, do you see it that way as well? Like that they're very different personalities and will approach things differently. They're both conservatives and they'll both have, you know, Republican ideology.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I served with Spencer for one session in the House when he was in the House of Representatives. And Spencer tended towards, you know, more moderate positions in the legislature. I won't say that as a knock. I'm just saying he tended towards more moderate positions, and definitely had a very, you know, you want to say he had a very moderate tone. However, when it came time to trying to figure out, you know, John Swallow and what to deal with, how to deal with the attorney general's offices, and the concerns in the general's office, Spencer was not shy.
That's my recollection as well. He was one of the first ones to come out and say, we won't stand for this.
He stood up and said, you know, and I still have the phrase, you know, I'll be damned, right? Mm-hmm. He just kept saying that. And that was, he had a blog post that I think is now gone, probably online, probably, you know, he doesn't need it anymore. It's too bad because it was very well written. Mm-hmm. And so it was clear that Spencer, you know, takes probably a more moderate position than Greg. Has a probably more polished way of being himself. But you juxtapose that against Greg, who I will argue, if you need a brick wall to be moved, you ask Greg to move it.
Greg's your guy.
Right? You might not be happy afterwards about, like, he took not only the brick wall, but he removed the other brick walls too because they seemed like they were in the wrong place. Right?
Yeah.
And that's what I think. Greg is a man of action. Mm-hmm. And so in that way,
voters are going to get a real.
Yeah, you're going to get a real doer of things. And that's what I'm trying to figure out.
I'm just going to ask this question kind of parenthetically, but who is more prepared for this job?
Oh, man.
So if you think about it, Greg Hughes, you know, all that time in the House and serving as Speaker, he's going to know state government extremely well.
Yes.
And then he's a self-made, you know, businessman.
Mm-hmm.
Fair?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In Spencer Cox's case, been a mayor, county commissioner, legislator, lieutenant governor,
Well, he was also an attorney, and he did
trained
very
attorney,
well as an attorney as
and
well.
And also in business.
Yeah, and as a business guy, working
so
with his,
if
working
you were just
with Centricom, I think.
Juxtaposing their backgrounds, both real high-quality candidates for the office.
Yeah.
Which gets us to you, Josh, because what are you going to counter that with? These are two really high-quality candidates.
Well, they are. Look, you can't deny that they are. Just because I'm on the left, I'm not going to deny that they're both really
good
smart,
for you, Josh.
Really good people. And, you know, look, people on the left tend to really like Spencer and thinks that he is, as Dan was saying, takes the more moderate position. I think they're both, you know, eminently prepared for the job. I think Spencer, in my view, would be slightly better qualified for the job given his demeanor. But who knows?
Yeah. So on the sidelines, we have Amy Winder Newton. We have Jeff Birmingham, and we have Thomas Wright. Let's just really and you can bring out the D's as well if you want. Brian King, Pat Jones, Scott Howell. Those are the names that have been thrown out there. If you want to throw out other ones, Josh. But
I can't imagine there are any until they all lose the mayoral race, and then we'll see everybody else wants to try next.
Dan, a commentary on Newton, Birmingham, and Hugh. And,
I just snorted. Sorry.
Oh, you're okay. And
I made him do it.
Thomas Wright.
That was a great comment, Josh. Like I don't want anybody to be lost. But literally, he's like, look, every Democrat is currently running for Salt Lake City mayor, and I guess we'll see who doesn't get it. And they'll be available for governor.
Thank you for picking up on that.
That is a awesome. Both sides of the aisle first, right? The news was broken here.
Yeah, that was seriously awesome, because that's the hardest part about the Democrats is their office, you know, is the
Salt Lake City and Salt Lake County
mayor, right?
Yeah.
And that's the office that's kind of the pinnacle right now.
And Democratic Party chair. And
haven't
Democratic
had
Party
a statewide chair. Office, if I'm not mistaken, since Jan Graham in the Attorney General.
In the Attorney
General.
General's office, yeah, that's right.
Okay, so the people on the sidelines, Dan, to you, Wright, Birmingham, and Newton.
Oh, man. You know, I like Birmingham for a lot of reasons. He's an everyday Utah citizen, right? Mm-hmm. No government experience, and in some ways, that kind of perspective to government can be helpful.
So a Silicon Slopes candidate,
BYU
guys, made a lot of money, entrepreneurial, comes from the outside, uber smart.
Yeah, so you're trying to figure out.
He'll mix things up.
Yeah, he can make some changes, right? But he knows how to drive things from an industry standpoint.
So someone that the public's going to have to be introduced
to. Yeah. I think Amy is really, really interesting because she's a really smart woman and very hardworking. And I think anybody that underestimates Amy is probably going to regret that.
I think pretty good name ID, given that she's been
good
in elected
ID.
Office.
Well, and you know, when
outside
you're
of Salt Lake County, though?
Yeah, probably not.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. I won't discount that. Although I will say, and it's the same thing with Richard Snellgrove. I asked Richard Snellgrove one time, you know, how are you so successful in Utah, Salt Lake County? He's like, well, when your family sells ice cream, as long as it did, people recognize the Snellgrove name, right? And the Winder
Trust
name.
Trust me, Catherine found that out the hard way.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, right?
This is Josh's wife.
I say a little close to home. But I will just say.
How many votes did she lose by the way, when she ran?
Under 2%.
Yeah, so.
There's a few thousand.
It would have been helpful to have an ice cream name.
We still have
450,000 votes. That's a lot
of votes. She's now deputy mayor.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, she's done well.
She's done well.
She's done well.
She married
by the
Cantor
name.
You
know. I married up. Oh, let's be clear.
So, but I think you know you look at Amy, and then you mentioned one
Thomas Wright.
Yeah, Thomas Wright. I never count Thomas out of anything, but if Thomas doesn't hurry up and do something, the train will have left. Mm-hmm. And Thomas is young enough where that may not faze him, where he's just like, you know what, in 8 years or 12 years, there will come another opportunity, and I'll look at it then.
Thomas is the Republican National Committee man for our state.
Yes, very successful
former
real estate
chair
guy,
of the Republican Party.
Phenomenal golfer.
He caught my eye when he was the Republican Party
it's
chair,
a big deal to me.
And he handled a very rambunctious convention.
Yeah,
I saw his negotiation skills, his leadership skills. So. That'll be an interesting one.
Yeah, no doubt. You laugh when I say good golfer. There is an ethos among golfers. They're self-policing. They're good,
golfer.
Ethical guys. So, okay. I just say I like golfers. Whenever Gary Herbert is a golfer.
Mike
they're
Levitt's
good,
a
honest
golfer.
People. Mike Levitt's a golfer. I just
yeah,
say good
I've spent enough time on the golf, you know, just because you have to do it to get to know
are
these
you
good
underlining
golfers.
Enough and putting it in bold, or are you just saying, I've spent my time?
I've done a little bit. Hey, so let's turn to Salt Lake City. this will give Josh a little bit more to contribute here. Christian Harrison drops out of the mayor's race, puts his support behind David Garbett. I thought that was just, you know, that's what's supposed to happen here.
Yeah,
what I mean is you have a big field and you start
big,
to narrow it out and align candidates, align with each other because they're going to split votes. And
yeah, it's a big field, and I think it's going to be difficult to see what happens as we get into sort of the debate season. Alliance for Utah is hosting a debate on June 26th for some of the mayoral candidates. And
how
Christian,
are you deciding who gets to be in the debate? I'm curious.
We're doing polling.
Oh, okay. So you are basically
we're going to have polling done.
A certain percentage. If you have more than 5%, you're in. 2%, you're in.
At the moment, it's top four.
Okay,
if you had to guess, like where the bubble is on the top four right now, what does that look like for Salt Lake City mayor? Just a guess.
Boy, I honest to God don't know. I mean, I think obviously, you know, DeBacchus is going to pull away with a big number.
Yeah.
It seems like Garbett's got pretty good name recognition. I think that was probably one of Christian's problems.
Yeah.
Aaron, I think, is coming up much stronger than she probably should. David Ibarra, I think, has pretty good name ID, at least in the city. Luz, of course, right? Luz has, I think, really good
recognition. It's hard to get the top four.
So it's going to be tough. But, I mean, we're also...
Well, you're going to leave some good candidates out is what I'm hearing.
Except
it's possible.
But this is what I'm saying about Josh. He says right now it's top four, and I'm sort of like, wouldn't you love to run an organization like Josh where you have that much flexibility? Because it's not like it's the Utah Debate Commission and
our rules are set, and they're out. And our debate partner, as you guys I think know, is the John R. Park Debate Society at the University of Utah. So we don't get to mess with this. But we had heard that there was a complaint about us setting it as top four because there are so many candidates. And so we're at least revisiting whether that's something we need to look at. But I think, again, Christian dropping out is, it's unfortunate. He's got a lot of good ideas, and I think that we'll see those ideas come to the discussion through David Garbett. And so I think, as you said, Natalie, it's the right process. And it's good because it is too many people, and no one's going to have a sense of who all these people are and what differentiates
them. I love open seats. Mayor Biskupski, she'd be great if she were in this. But since she's not, I love these open seats because it just brings out all this talent.
Yeah.
And we're going to see the same thing, obviously, in the governor's race. Quick local news before we jump to gripes. Let's just Inland Port getting another interference at their meetings. Quick predictions. What do you think's happening there, Dan?
My personal feeling is that a political battle was waged to keep Greg Hughes from running the Inland Port. And I think everyone will look back and regret that decision. And the reason I say that is I think the Inland Port, as it is currently constituted, seems to be listing aimlessly a little bit.
Maybe we'll go down.
I don't know, right? It's too early to see if there's the will to do it. But I don't know who on that committee is going to put that thing on its back and run through a wall with it.
Yeah, I'll make a prediction that in the 2020 legislative session, there's some adjustments made that will make this a little bit more comfortable to all involved, both on the environmental side and to Salt Lake City. Josh?
That could be. And I think that, you know, it's an interesting comment, Dan, that you make. I think with Hughes, the conflict of interest was really significant to us as an organization. And I think that's the focus that we're continuing. You know, we're not trying to block it. We're not trying to support it. We just want it done right. Whether that means...
He owns real estate that is within a city within a 5-mile radius. Most of Salt Lake City would be disqualified in that situation. And then we came back and changed the law after the politics of the day said, well, as long as you don't appoint Greg Hughes, we can change that policy. And then we changed the policy and allowed the Salt Lake City council person that owns. It's just mind-numbing to me when politics gets in the way of what I think is good.
When people are lending service.
Yeah.
It's a
Greg
tough
Hughes, at the end of the day, that whole conflict was cockamamie and fabricated.
Yeah.
I've spoken my piece.
Guys, we've got to jump to gripes. Dan, do you want to stay with your peaceful?
I think I've done griping for the day. Got me all my blood all boiling today.
Have fun on that flight tonight.
That means Josh is doing a good job.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
he's always good.
Josh, do you have a gripe?
Ish.
Yeah, I'll tell you. My biggest gripe is unfortunately the one we already talked about, which is that there are so few seats that Democrats can run successfully for that we have, you know, at one point, 10 people or whatever the number is running for Salt Lake City mayor. We need more balance in the state, and we need to find offices that these people can run for. There's some good people out there.
Yeah.
Make a dog catcher position they can elect for.
You know, it is the year for that kind of comment to be said the next 18 months, because between the mayoral race in Salt Lake City and the gubernatorial race and the presidential race, there's going to be a lot of politics.
Well, and don't forget, Salt Lake County mayor is up next year as well. I mean, Jenny has to defend the new seat. So I'll just say it is going to be a gauntlet for the next couple of years.
Lots to talk about on both sides of the aisle.
Which makes this show awesome.
Yeah, it does.
Tune in.
My gripe, I didn't know which one to do. I was thinking too many school districts in the state. It's been bugging me because it gets in the way of efficiencies and the like, but who wants to do that? Since I did the two-day turnaround to D.C. and back, I'm going to pick legroom on Delta flights. And I'm only 5'7". I mean, that's
a
tall for a woman, but I'm just feeling for my taller counterparts.
I know. And I don't know what it is, but I always – there seemed to be in the row right across the aisle from me, there seemed to be three petite ladies – all sitting there, and then there's three larger shouldered guys always sitting right on my row, and it, you know, so shoulder room's not that much better, Natalie, is what I'm telling you.
It's always fun watching the dynamics of a flight and who gets to sit where and who gets to load when, and I don't know, the airlines are the masters of discriminatory pricing and practices. This is an economist's point of view. I'd have to deal with that.
Yep.
You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner with Josh Cantor and Dan McKay. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thank you for listening.